Hello, amazing parents and caretakers, and welcome to the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. I'm your family empowerment coach, Celia Kibler. I'm a mom of a blended family of five kids. I'm a grandma of nine kids, an author, a teacher, a speaker, and a consultant with over 40 years of training and real-life parenting experience. I'm here to offer you practical, doable tips, strategies, and techniques that will pump up your parenting skills and create peace, love, and laughter throughout your family. In addition, I'll be interviewing some great humans that are on a mission to make your life a better, happier, and healthier life. So let's not waste any time and get started with the next episode of the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. Thanks for listening. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. I have a great human with me today. We're talking all about taking back control over you, doing what you want to do, and motivating yourself to get it done. Nick Klingensmith, the founder of Stride Motivation LLC, and we are going to talk about his struggle. His struggles that he turned into successes. You'll be floored about this. He is a four times cancer survivor. Say that again. Four times cancer survivor. So he was definitely meant to be more for this earth. No one was taking him out too soon, certainly not cancer. So Nick, welcome to the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And fun fact, I used to misspell my last name until I was in like the second or third grade.
Really?
Ironically enough, I added letters to it instead of making it shorter.
That is so funny. That is a fun fact. I love that. That is awesome. That's so funny. See, sometimes these names are just too complicated. They're just too complicated. But, you know, once you say it, it's okay. So, Nick, if you would tell everybody how they can reach you, because in case somebody has to leave the podcast early, they know how to reach you. And then if you would, just tell us, like, your little journey to being this great, empowered self that you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, easiest and best place to find me is on any of my socials at Stride Motivation. That's on pretty much any social media channel or my last name for LinkedIn and Facebook. And of course, my book, my memoir, Through the Fire, is available on Amazon. And the book really is a chronicle of, you know, I don't even want to say my struggle. I want to say my story. I am a four-time cancer survivor. I'm a type 1 diabetic. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I have 7 herniated discs. I used to think it was 4. Recent MRIs reveal 7. I have sleep apnea. I've got nerve damage, you know, bad attitude, whatever, all the regular stuff that, you know, bills to pay that life has, that everybody has too. And I wish I could tell you that I was always just this resilient person or that I had this positive attitude, and that's not the case. I mean, if you were to look through my story, you're going to see a psychic change over time. But from 2005, when I got cancer for the first time, pretty much until September of 2016, we'll get to that in a minute, I had a victim mindset. And it wasn't that I was going to be this resilient or defiant overcomer. I was mad. Why me? You know, F you, God. It was, and I was gritty. I knew that, but it was almost like I wore it like a badge, this victimhood, like a badge. And all that ended up doing was justifying my drinking. You know, it took a long time for it to really kind of take over and manifest, but there comes a point where you tell yourself that the world is against you enough times and you start to believe it. So, you know, you really think that you're on your own, and then you're like, you know what, I'm going to do everything contrary. And, you know, everything I do is like an F you to how you're supposed to do it. And it was almost like a superpower for a long time. You know, I was the guy who, I loved it when some drone at the other end of an 800 number said, well, that's not how it works, or you can't do that. I'm like, oh, yes, I can, you know, and I'm taking on the insurance company and I'm picking these big fights and I'm fighting with a doctor's office or just doing this impossible thing. You know, I once had a manager from Home Depot hand deliver something to me that was supposed to be shipped and misrouted because I
really
I threw a fit of biblical proportions because I knew I could accomplish these things. But what I didn't realize at the time is it was reinforcing my selfish resentments. And it was also exhausting me. It was isolating me from the rest of the world. And it was really just another form of being a victim. You know, oh, I've been taken advantage of by this big company who didn't do what they said. So now I'm going to bring them to their knees and make sure I take two whole days of my life to do it rather than wait 12 hours or spend $30 or something insignificant like that. And so the key thing that really changed for me, though, is I got sober in 2014 and I had a really great couple of years. You know, like when you start opening your eyes to a different life and people start treating you differently, you start seeing situations differently. You know, I really did start to have this mindset of maybe I overcame all this, but I hadn't done anything different in my life. And in August of 2016 was when I got cancer for the fourth time and had it removed. It was in the back of my head. And it was the first time I was given an all clear. You know, the first three times of cancer were thyroid. I still have a tumor. It's been there for 10 years. But this time when they took it out of the back of my head, it was the first time when I went for a follow-up, they're like, okay, it's all gone. No cancer. I'm like, what do you mean? And for the first time in a long time, I found myself without an enemy. You know, I had accepted the fact that I had this tumor in my neck. I was working on being less angry at the world because I was working on just being a better, sober human being. I'd been promoted at work. I had a great team. I started dating my now wife. Like everything was going for me and I was just lost. And that's when my boss at the time, and this is September of 2016, walked into my office and said, hey, I want you to do a Spartan race with me. And I'm like, no way. I don't want to be that uncomfortable. An 8 to 10 mile trail run with obstacles and mud and getting up to train for this. No, this is impossible. Don't you know I'm a diabetic and I have cancer and I'm a recovering alcoholic and I have all these things wrong with me. And so I went home that night though, with this thing in my head that I didn't want to put myself into that level of discomfort. But I'm sitting there and all these thoughts are circulating, you know, and I'm living this wonderful life and I just feel empty. And that's when it hit me. I already was that uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable in my own skin. I had taken out so much negativity from inside of me. And now something else had to replace it. And that's when the very next day that night I signed up for the race. And the very next day I started training. And that was 7 years and a month ago and change. And it's not only changed my life, but it's changed my perspective and attitude on everything that I talk about. I don't believe I've ever been a victim and I know I will never be a victim again.
It's a just such an inspiring and encouraging story. And for you guys listening, what you don't see is that there are about a gazillion, I'm not sure how many, a gazillion medals behind Nick's head. And you don't see that if you're just listening to this podcast. And they're all like Spartan races and what else? What are they all Spartan races?
No, we've got 97 Spartans. We've got 6 major marathons, including Boston, Chicago, New York, and Berlin. And then there's maybe 25 other, actually I've lost track, but we'll call it 30 other obstacle course races, 5Ks, 10Ks, stuff like that.
It's quite the mesmerizing scene that there are that many medals hanging behind you. And when one hears all the obstacles that you could have continued through your life to make excuses for and blame, this is why I'm not doing this, this is why I'm doing, well, here we go again. All of that, which I'm sure came into your life that you no longer do. People listening have to realize, and I say it to my clients, I say it to parents all the time, that it's all a choice. It is all you making a choice to do something different, to do something where you're like, I take responsibility for this. Ultimately, yes. Did you have lots of things to knock you down? Absolutely. Like more than your share. Did you have health issues? Yes. But at some point you said, enough is enough. And I need to do what I need to do. And what I love that you said, Nick, and you can talk more about it, is that you actually said getting out of your comfort zone is uncomfortable. But I was already uncomfortable. I've been uncomfortable my whole life. Do you want to talk more about that?
Because yeah, absolutely.
So many people don't realize that. Your comfort zone is not always comfortable.
You know, I appreciate what you said, except for one thing I would argue with is I don't think I've had more than my share. I don't think I'm unique at all. And I can talk to 10 people a day and they can tell me their problems and I'm fine with mine. Theirs may be less, well, life-threatening. but I still don't want them. You know, I think we all have our own frame of reference. And the one thing that I think is, because it's important for me to, it's really important to me for other people to understand that. You know, I share a lot on my social media about my failures in races. I don't want somebody to see just the good stuff. And because what they're going to do is they're going to look at me and say, I can't do that. And they are wrong. They are very wrong. Anybody who thinks they can't do what I do is 100% wrong. And I challenge them, look me up and I will find a way to challenge you on that. The reason I know this, because I have an 82-year-old friend who's done 200 of these. You know, I know a 93-year-old World War II veteran who I've seen out of the course many times. The guy slaps hands away when people try to help him. I see adaptive athletes out there all the time showing you what mental toughness and spirit really is about. And so I'm representative of so many of the different things that could be wrong, but I don't think that I'm ultimately unique. But what you said that was so critical in that too, is that I simply made a choice. It wasn't like I woke up and there was just this message in my head that I'm supposed to go do epic stuff. And that's how, you know, I'm going to make my mark in the world. It was really, I just started doing things and I started showing myself that I could do more. You know, the craziest thing I ever did, the most uncomfortable thing I think I had ever done in my life was set the alarm for 5:15 a.m. to get up and train the next day. Yeah. And it was because it was the one that defied everything that I previously thought about myself. I've never been a morning person. I've never, ever been the guy who can wake up without an alarm clock. And I'm like, yay, I'm happy to be alive. No, there's not a single day in my life I'm like that. I want to go back to bed 100% of the time. And when I just made that choice that I'm going to commit to this race and I'm going to train for this race. And when I woke up and I got out there and I did it and I go, oh, look, I can do that. And then all of a sudden I was like, I can do it again. It became part of a lifestyle and these subtle changes began to follow one another. And it really was during, you know, I would share my story on social media. And of course, there'd be a lot of people who would kind of follow me and say, yeah, you're so inspiring. But those were all the people that I knew already. I wasn't really didn't have much of a following or anything, but it just started to show me that maybe what I'm doing does have an impact on others. And so a buddy of mine, well, I don't know if he's a buddy, but he once kind of challenged me. And because I always say that my purpose is to overcome every obstacle and inspire others that they can too. And, you know, by putting myself through the fire, if it helps someone else, I feel better. I live better. And, you know, he basically was like, listen, God didn't ordain you to do this. Like, isn't this a self-serving philosophy? And my response was, who cares? Who cares? It's a self-renewing fuel. And if it helps others, that energy just kind of comes back around. And so it really became a transformative experience for me all around, just to know that I have something that can help others. So it really is a choice, because now I made the choice to look at bad things happening as opportunities for me to be that defiant kid, to something else, to show that we're not a victim and that we can overcome it. And, you know, the X factor here, though, and I think this is where a lot of people go left, is trying to find the right wording, but yeah, we'll just say it, without it being hard, without pain, without being effort. You know, a lot of people will look and say, oh, I want to overcome this and overcome that. And then the first thing they realize is they have to do something different and they stop. So when I say and I tell people that you can do anything that I can do, the caveat is this: I'm not promising that you can do it without pain. I'm not promising right. you can do it without discomfort. But, you know, I've got seven herniated discs, and I'll tell you this, I hurt a lot more when I'm sitting around on the couch than I do when I'm putting myself through training.
Absolutely. You know, I have scoliosis. I have three curves in my spine, and I wore a body brace for 5 years. And there are three things that my doctor told me through my life I should never either do or not do. And one of them was never smoke, because one of the curves affects one of my lungs. One was never get overweight, never, you know, become obese. And the other was never stop moving, like never stop moving. And even when I transitioned through COVID, because I also have a kids fitness company that I've had since 87, and those classes ended pretty much through COVID because, you know, there wasn't in-person stuff going on. And I transitioned to more full-time coaching for parents. I wound up sitting a lot more. And I've never, I mean, not never had back pain, but overall, my back, I know how to move. I know what to do with it. It doesn't bother me. Once in a while, it bothers me, usually because I'm sitting on a wrong chair or something. But when I stop moving, I had back pain like I've never had, you know? So to your comment, we're meant to move.
Mm-hmm.
We need to move every day and not be sedentary. Absolutely. So, you know, and the other thing you were talking about is taking that first step. And sometimes people are like, well, I'm not strong enough. I don't have the confidence to do this. I'll never be good at it or whatever. And what people don't realize is that taking the steps to doing something doesn't require confidence. It creates confidence.
Absolutely.
So every time you take a step, you're becoming more and more confident in yourself and in whatever it is you're trying to achieve.
Action conquers all doubt is something I say repeatedly. And, you know, I mean, I left my corporate job going on 6 weeks, actually exactly 6 weeks ago, as I pursue my speaking and coaching career. And there is a giant just plateau horizon of blank space, you know? And I told my dad yesterday, he called me and he starts asking me some like, hey, do you guys have this? What's your size on this? And I say, hey, if you guys are thinking about holiday presents, we wear a size mortgage payment.
Right.
So yet I am stepping out when I say this, but I would venture a guess that most people in my position and situation, staring into that blank space, would be absolutely petrified and paralyzed, and they would make a desperate decision to go get a paycheck that they hate. They might be smarter than me, but it's not that I know it will work out. It's that I know I can survive. It doesn't mean that I know my life. That's what I tell my wife. I have 100% confidence that we're going to get there. But I don't know what we're going to have to endure in order to get there. I don't know if we'll have to downsize our life for a while in the meantime, you know, but these are, again, things that I know. Being uncomfortable is not the same as being killed.
Right. You're not right? Dead.
Like, you're not dead. I mean, there are times where you make different choices. You know, I could have made this choice a year ago and it would have been less responsible. In 2020, I was a sales consultant and my client wanted to hire me full time and I almost did not. And then I decided to take the job because it was May of 2020. Like, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my biggest client one way or the other. I don't know what's going to come next. I might as well take this. But right now it's a little bit different. You know, everything's a situation. Last year, I broke my rib mile 3 of an 8 mile race and I finished the race. And it's like one of the proudest moments of my life. And I can go into why at a different time. But yet, a month ago, I was in Dallas and I strained my hamstring in mile 12 of a 30 mile race and I tapped out. You know, that I didn't put my identity on that race the same way I did the first time. You know, everything's a situation. And I think a lot of why I want to keep attacking these things is diabetes is my enemy. Absolutely it is. It's giving me a hard time right now. You know what I mean? The other day it was up over 300 in the morning. It had been that way for like 12 hours, which this is one of those do as I say, not as I do, because you're not supposed to go run for an hour when you have a blood sugar level that high, for as high as I did. But that's how I fight back. You know, you tell me I can't, let's just see about that, because it's not like I'm going out and intentionally trying to hurt myself, but I want to break those boundaries just a little bit. I don't want to be confined by the doctor's advice, whose job is to keep you out of harm,
right?
Not necessarily to help you live your best life.
Right. And your brain's job. That's your brain's job.
Absolutely.
Is to keep you safe. So it doesn't want you to take risks. Unless you're a teenager, then your brain does want you to take risks. But, you know, in normal life, its job is to keep this body safe. And so it's going to go against a lot of things, and it's going to make you feel uncomfortable about doing a lot of things, because that's its job. That's how we are wired. So rewire yourself. Do something that your brain thinks you can't do, and then you've done it. Now you can do the next thing that your brain thinks you can't do, because it then keeps you going step by step to achieve whatever you're looking to achieve.
Every time you step into fear, you redefine like your life. You push the limits of your life. Every time you step outside that comfort zone, you're shining the light in an area that you didn't think was once capable. And the thing is, the light doesn't go back out again. That's it. That's your new world. You have expanded the world of which you live in.
You've achieved it. And that's part of that mental toughness. Just, you know, believing that you can. That's half the battle, because so many people doubt themselves. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't do that. I can't do what he does. You know, I have diabetes. I can't do what he does. You know, they assume, like we do with others, with ourselves, we assume that we can't do it. And surprisingly, if you break that goal down and you break it into small steps, and you take the first step like you did, setting your alarm for 5:15, well, you know what? I just took the first step. Now I'm contradicting that I'm not a morning person, because you know what? I just got up at 5:15.
I'm not a morning person.
It's funny because, you know, you always hear like these incredible, successful humans, and they're like, yes, in the morning I get up and I go exercise and I do this and I do that. And I'm like, in the morning, I like to sit on my couch with a cup of coffee.
That's
and
my
maybe
wife.
Do. I just really enjoy that.
So people talk about delaying gratification, right? And they're talking about, like, you know, having that cookie later or something like that. That moment you just described is a reward for me. If I hit all my workouts throughout the week, Sunday is my day off. And, you know, there are those no days off and blah, blah. And I mean, there's always something I do, right? I might be reading, I'm writing, I might be stretching, like, but it's not a big training day. And I have to train first thing in the morning, or I might not do it, especially living in Florida, where it's like just by noontime, it's
right,
hotter than the sun. And so it's really the amount of mornings I'm doing my stretching or warming up, and I'm like, I just want to sit and drink coffee next to the dogs and watch the day stir. And I'm like, well, you can't. So that's Sunday for me, is I'm like, I get this reward where I just get to have this like serene morning. And I wish I could do that every day, but
you have a goal.
Exactly.
And that's a great point too, is that as you reach your goals, whatever they are, you know, training, marathons, weight loss, eating a certain way, you know, reading a book, whatever the goal is, reward yourself along the way. You know, give yourself some credit for achieving every step. Be proud of yourself. Tap yourself on the back. Tell yourself you did a great job. No one should be as proud of you as you.
You know, when I set big goals, I like to set really big, like true north compass type goals, but you have to break them down into meaningful chunks. So, you know, I ran several mountain races last year, and it's one thing to say, hey, I'm going to race a mountain race. Like, okay, that's a big goal. But I'm thinking about it, and I was in, well, they call it Cincinnati. It was really over in Indiana, whatever that Ski Mountain is like right on the border, and it was hot and I was suffering. And one of the obstacles is a sandbag carry. So you're carrying a 60 or so sandbag, and it's right on like the face of the mountain. So it's like a 45 degree angle, and they actually bring you up and down and around and like in the shape of a Spartan helmet. And because there was so much moisture in the morning and kind of water in different areas of the course, a lot of it was like beaten down. And so it was so slippery. So you couldn't even really carry it. And so literally I'm taking this bag, which probably weighs 80 something pounds now because of all the moisture. I'm deadlifting it in front of me. I'm pushing it up 3 or 4 inches, crawling up, readjusting and doing that again. And to think that you're climbing a mountain 4 inches at a time, it seems like impossible. Like you'll never get there. And I literally just kept repeating to myself, yes, I can. Yes, I can. It wasn't the physical act of doing it. It was the physical act of not quitting. Right. To keep moving forward when it just seemed like it was fruitless. But even though my huge goals were to climb mountains, you climb them one step at a time, sometimes one hand at a time.
Yeah. And how proud of yourself were you by the time
you did that? To be honest, I might have focused a little more on how I wish I had done better. That was more of a wide awakening. I'm big on self-reflection. It's not like I don't let myself have wins, but the reason I'm able to tell that story with so much memory is I don't think I was being as tough that day as I could have been. You know, I remember complaining a little bit, like, oh, this sucks. This is uncomfortable. And during that, like, suffer fest of a moment was sort of my spiritual awakening that said, dude, this is what you signed up for.
Right.
And so I kind of needed that because, you know, every once in a while we do ride on our laurels, right? Like we're like, hey, I achieved this. I made it. And then you get smacked in the face with the next thing. You're like, okay, wait a minute. No, it never ends. It never stops. We just keep climbing.
Yeah.
So definitely had those moments, you know, like those days that, you know, sometimes just not quitting is enough.
Right. Exactly.
You got to be proud of yourself that you just didn't go backwards. Like we don't know all the forces that are against us on any given day. Like just not losing your shit can be a win sometimes.
Exactly. And goals, it's easy to quit on goals. I think specifically because we get overwhelmed. We don't break down the goal. Even something as simple as hi, parents. I'd like to take a break from this podcast to really tell you about my life's mission. I'd like to introduce you to the Day of Calm Foundation, a nonprofit 501c3 corporation where tranquility meets transformation. We believe in a world where unresolved anger and rage have no place, especially when it comes to the safety of our children. Our mission is clear: to bring an end to needless violence against the youngest members of our society through dedicated efforts with parents, schools, and community outreach. We strive to soothe the human core and foster a culture of calm. This Giving Tuesday and throughout the year, I invite you to join us in this vital cause. Your support will be the cornerstone of creating generations of calmer, happier adults. Together, we can build a future where every child grows up in an environment free from unnecessary aggression. Please visit our website, dayofcalm.org. Donate and be a part of this movement towards the Day of Calm. Mark your calendars for April 5th when we celebrate the International Day of Calm and bring together speakers from around the world that help build your calm in all areas of your life during our annual summit. I strongly believe, and I hope you do too, that a peaceful world begins with intention, personal responsibility, and a tranquil heart. Please join us by going to dayofcalm.org. Now back to our podcast. This closet is a mess. And for years and years, that closet stresses you out. You'll even open it. Because if you had just taken 5 minutes a day to do one thing in that closet, in 2 weeks, your closet would have been straightened and you wouldn't have been suffering for, you know, 2 years.
Exactly.
And that's the beauty of breaking down any goal is when you do a step, you get a step closer. And for your goals, you know, you have to train for them. You can't just expect to be physically able to do some things that you do. You have to train. You have to go step by step. But then you also start achieving and stop feeling the overwhelm.
The process is where we make the progress, right? And I think a lot of times it's not cliche to say, be proud of the steps you took, because, you know, again, I'm just going to put this in the metaphor of a mountain. If I moved five steps, that meant I moved 20 inches with this big sandbag. Climbing up a mountain might seem nothing, but when I look behind me, I'm 20 inches further away than I was. I'm 20 inches closer than I was. And the more you go forward, the more perspective you get, the higher you climb, the more you can see. So there's an exponential ripple effect about just moving forward, about stepping out. And, you know, even in that that race where I hurt myself a couple weeks ago and was unable to continue, I mean, I'm able to look and see the obstacle that I beat that day that I struggled with before that. I'm actually able to look, and this was tough for me because I saw that I was pacing eighth place and a top 10 finish was a big goal of mine. Now, I mean, given there was 18 more miles ahead, who knows what would have happened. But for a minute, like, I was really kicking myself because I'm like, man, I could have had eighth. But then I said, wait a minute, I could have had eighth. And if I could have, I can. So that was my first glimpse at really being right there with the opportunity to achieve something that, once again, I thought wasn't, I race in the competitive division for two primary reasons. One is because I just want to hold myself accountable to the elite standards. And I want to have some sort of a consistent barometer to track my progress. Beyond that, it's just that I want to show others that they can compete. I want other diabetics to see that you can play in the same playing field as, you know, the top athletes. Like, we might have a little bit further to go to the starting line, but once you're there, you're there. And, you know, the fact that I even come in the top 50% of the racers more often than not should just be a sign for so many people that, like, yeah, you can get off the couch and go do that thing that you don't think you can. It doesn't always have to be physical activity either, right? Like, you want to talk about self-doubt. I've been in sales a long time, and I am a firm believer of knowing your numbers and knowing your ratios, and, you know, this many calls to this many appointments. Well, I'm now in a venture where I don't know what my ratios are. I don't know how many calls I'm supposed to make to get to how many decision makers, to how many speaking engagements, or how many coaching engagements. So I'm going to have to learn as I, you know, learn as I go. And it seems like this big thing. I mean, the financial goals that I have are the climbing mountains. So right. It's real easy to look and say, well, I might as well freak out because I'm not there yet. But more often than not, if you take it back to the very present moment and you ask yourself, what is the one thing I should be doing right now that moves me closer to my goals? More often than not, you're doing that one thing and you can relax. You know, for me, that moments of panic come at night when I'm stretching and I'm like, what am I supposed to do right now? Well, I need to get up early so I can have a good day. Okay, then what do I need to do? I need to go to bed early and get a good night's sleep. Okay, so what I need to do? I need to stretch and meditate and relax. Well, what am I doing? I'm stretching and meditating, relaxing.
I'm actually doing it. Good job.
So more often than not, you know, it's good to be thinking about it, but it's, and I don't always know that the next step is the right next step to take, but I know that standing still is not the action to take.
Right. And sometimes overthinking it will cause you to stand still. Because you spend all your time overthinking the process and not actually taking any action.
And just because you, the same concept of taking that step and getting more perspective, sometimes you take the wrong step. And again, there's no roadmap for me. So how am I supposed to learn where the right way is? Right. Can't be afraid of taking the wrong step. You know, you just got to recognize it and also be willing to adapt. You know, we talk about resilience and mental toughness, and that doesn't always mean what people think it is. It doesn't always mean, you know, putting your head down like a determined warrior and barreling through the wall. Sometimes you're supposed to go around that wall. Sometimes
exactly.
You're supposed to go over it. Sometimes that wall exists to tell you, hey, by the way, this is not the path. You're supposed to go over there.
Right.
It doesn't mean that, oh, I can't go where I want to go, you know, or that where I'm supposed to get there. It just sometimes means the path isn't the one that's going to take us where we want.
Exactly. You have to remember that the road to success is full of those mistakes and little failures and things. They shouldn't be walls.
Yeah.
They should be time to pause and rethink, replan. Okay, well, that didn't work out. So what's going to get me to that goal? And sometimes maybe the goal has to be rethought. Maybe you have to be like, okay, this is not exactly the goal I want. I want this.
I had to have a secondary goal in 2022. My first goal was to complete this ultra 30-mile mountain race in September, exactly 90 days after I fractured my rib. So that wasn't going to happen, and I knew it. And 2 weeks after that race was the Berlin Marathon. So I said, okay, I can do that. And yeah, training for a marathon with a busted rib was
not fun.
But you know, you can do it, right? Like, so I had to alter my warm up so I don't twist and pull, and I had to take myself up and make sure I'm real stiff for a while, like while I'm building the cardio. I had to tweak my goal, and I ran a 7-minute personal best 90 days after I broke my rib. So amazing. When you put your focus into something else, it's like, did I fail my main goal? Yes. And it's okay. It's a failure. I own it. Cool. Move on. Like, what did I do? What can I do different? I'll get hurt.
And but, it's an important thing to when you're helping your children with mistakes and failures. They should not be overwhelming walls. They should not be things that stop you. They should be actually things that you learn from and you keep moving forward from.
I think we might have discussed this before, but you know, one of the things that I talk about lately is when did we ever get into our heads that we had to be right about everything? When did we get into our heads that we had to be perfect and know how to do everything the first time? And you know, I made a post about this on LinkedIn a couple days ago or last week or something, but if you name any like entrepreneur or athlete or any of the people that we sort of look up to as a society at all, every single one of them has a failure story.
Absolutely.
You know, hey, here's where I faced catastrophic disaster, family loss, home loss. They might have done those anyway. You know what I mean? Steve Jobs was fired from his own company.
Right, exactly.
Before he came back, like, they all have this great failure story. And the reason we know that failure story is because they kept moving forward. And,
right.
You know, whether or not I have a successful 2024 or not will not deter whether or not I am ultimately successful or not, because I'm just going to keep going until I am.
Exactly. The only thing that will ultimately stop you is giving up.
Absolutely. And failure isn't fatal unless it's final. And that's a decision that we get to make.
Another choice. It's all about choice, my friends, all about choice. So Nick of Stride Motivation, love having you on, love this discussion. What I would like to ask you, if you would, once again, tell people how they can reach you. And we've given so much, there's so much advice here. There's so much information here. There's so many things that people should learn for themselves, take advantage of, and help their children. Is there one thing you can offer a parent who has a child who is not necessarily motivated, who is afraid of mistake and failure? Is there one piece of advice that you can give them?
You know, motivation is, it's a greeting card. It's not that it's fake. It's that it's fleeting. It's momentary. So, you know, for a parent trying to communicate to the, you know, I'm a perfect example for myself, all right? Because I was a chubby junior high kid. I had some friends. I had some activities. But really, I cared more about grandma's sugar than I did doing other things. And, you know, I wasn't good at anything in sports. I even faked an injury in junior high floor hockey so I wouldn't, like, in PE class, because I sucked at everything. I didn't want to play. A couple of years later, I was in high school and I joined the track team and I found a home there. And so we go into my senior year where I actually faked not being injured so that I could complete the season. That thing that I think a lot of kids in particular may not have, and this is maybe that a parent can understand, because I don't think kids are going to admit this too. Who wants to say, I'm lonely, nobody likes me, I don't belong anywhere? They don't. I'm not a parent, but I never said that until now. You know, but I felt that way my whole life, that I didn't fit in. But yet that first time that I did, that I felt a part of something bigger than myself, that it wasn't, nobody forced me to do anything. I just felt a part of the team. I wanted to contribute. I was motivated all the time to be the best version of myself through pain, through discomfort. It didn't matter that I wasn't as good as other kids because nobody treated me that way. So to help them find their own speed, because you cannot motivate them or push them to do something that they don't want to do, help them find the community and place that they can flourish. It might be a team, it might be a club, it might be at home, I don't know. But like, I didn't feel like I fit in, and I was never myself until I felt like I can fit in.
That is great advice. Great advice. You know, really see what your child's passion is, what their interest is, and then develop that. It may not be what you're interested in. So many parents are like, oh, you should play this sport. You should play this sport. You should play this sport. Maybe your child doesn't even like sports. Maybe they want to be in a computer club or acting or singing or something else. Find what makes them feel valuable. And that is just great advice. Thank you for that. So now we have to bring this podcast to an end. Nick, once again, say where people can reach out to you and learn more. And certainly if you're looking for a great speaker, Nick's your man. So Nick, let him know.
All right. StrideMotivation.com is my website. It's also where you'll be able to find this this podcast embedded in there at sooner than later. And Stride Motivation, at Stride Motivation, is how you'll find me on just about any of my social. I share motivational videos every day, just insights into lessons that I've learned from overcoming my personal adversity or just dealing with things that we see on a daily basis. And if you were to catch me on LinkedIn, it's my name. And Stride Motivation, just look me up, hit me up. The book's on Amazon, and I am always available to engage with people who are just looking to find a way to better themselves.
Imagine if you follow Nick and you listen to all his little videos and information that he's putting out. Do yourself a favor. Do your kids a favor. Let your kids follow Nick. I mean, it's great to see somebody like him that they look at and say, hey, I can do this too. So Nick, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me.
And to all of you, please share this out. If you loved it, leave us a comment, let us know, and let others know how much you enjoyed this podcast. And as always, I wish all of you days filled with peace, love, tons of laughter. You know how I feel about laughter. It really is the best medicine. And we'll see you here next time on the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Pumped Up Parenting Podcast. If you're really ready to start creating cooperation in your home, more listening, more joy, less stress, less yelling, less negotiating, and a whole lot less aggravation, then reach out to me and let's put a parenting system in place that works for you and your kids. Private and group coaching is available, and in 6 months or less, you will start seeing a much happier home that your children will blossom from instead of have to recover from. Get the manual that I wrote for your parenting journey, Raising Happy Toddlers, How to Build Great Parenting Skills, and Stop Yelling at Your Kids, along with my 3 children's books, All About Me, I Am Grateful, and Being Different is Fun. Find it all at pumpedupparenting.com.